space, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tom Holley. He's Mr. Miller. Also, Mr. Frank Fahey. S&P futures down 1975. NASDAQ futures down 29. And last night they were up for a while. And they were down more. These nighttime sessions, we just back and forth, back and forth. Thank God we have these nighttime sessions. What do you think, Frank? Do they do everybody any good?
It just makes you, it ruins a good night's sleep quite often.
Yes. Does it,
As evidenced by what happened the night Trump got elected.
Yeah.
The most we've ever seen the market down.
And then it went flying right back up, so.
It is. There's no liquidity at night. That's why it's it can be a false direction.
Yeah. Hey, you know, we've missed a few deaths and a few dates in the last week or two because we've got everything so sort of crazed, but the guy from Siegfried and Roy died. Roy. We saw that.
Wow.
Yeah,
he's 77. I was surprised he, quite frankly, I thought he was already dead.
No, just because you have him in the grave doesn't mean he was in the grave. I actually met that guy, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, he was.
Where'd you meet him?
I was over at the health club playing handball, and when I went in the locker room to shower up, there he was holding court with all these guys. He was the. More than anybody needs to know, he was the first guy I ever saw that had the all-over tan. I'm like, what the hell is that? I was so straight from the south side. All of a sudden, he had the all-over tan. I'm thinking, that's weird. But then I realized he must have his own huge estate. He could do whatever he wanted. It wasn't like he was out on the beach like everybody else. But they were asking him about the act and so forth, and they were asking about other animals. And people don't know the Siegfried and Roy. They started out as these magic act guys. One was a animal trainer and the other guy was a magician. Somehow or other, I don't know how they got started, but they had this a huge group of white tigers that they raised, and they had an elephant that they made disappear, and they originally were one of the acts. If anybody ever was in Vegas in the old days, you had these reviews. I mean, the Lido was at the Stardust, and what was the one at the Tropicana? Had a big one too, but they, man, these things were really, they were like $12 with, you know, 3-4 drinks included. So you sit down and they have this huge, you know, a lot of the ladies aren't wearing much clothes. That part was nice. But it was a serious sing and dance kind of a big, you know, like a play. That would be like act one. And then all of a sudden you'd have, well, they changed all the, you know, whatever the set. They'd somebody come out in the middle and do a magic act or, you know, be juggling act or something. These guys were all terrific. I mean, to get to Vegas, for God's sake. Well, Siegfried and Roy started out as that, being one of those kind of guys. Then they became a much bigger part of the Lido. And, God, Robin and I saw them. It had to be late 70s.
And she wow.
Then she went to see him when they had their own act at the Mirage. And she said every trick, you know, they had all kinds of singing and dancing and good-looking women and everything. But every trick that they did in their show then, we had seen at the Lido, where they just did one trick after another and then got off. She goes, I didn't see anything new like 15, 20 years later, but it was pretty spectacular stuff. I mean, you know, some lady would come down in a cage, like over the audience, like three-dimensionally, not even up there. You know, you could do mirrors and stuff. I'm not much on how you do this. And all of a sudden, they'd wing some, you know, a tarp over her, and there'd be a tiger in the cage. This is in the air, suspended over the audience. How the hell they pull that off, I have no idea. But they were, but Roy.
Magic, Tom.
Yeah, it's magic. Yeah, it's magic. But they were pretty good at it. And, when you walked into the Mirage, this was the first time, Vegas had ever seen anything. When the Mirage was built, nobody had ever seen anything like that. Just a brief bit of history, just because it's, I mean, it's interesting for people with numbers. Every other huge place, Caesars and the Stardust, all those places started out as, you know, one building, and the Stardust started out as like a motel. Then they built this huge tower, and Caesars, you know, was a, if you see pictures of it in the 50s, you see the original building, and that's it. And all of a sudden, they had a great couple of years, and they'd add on. They add on. Same thing with the was the first one. Was not the first one, but the one Bugsy was. How's the name of the place? It's right across from the, I've stayed there 100 times. I'll think of it. But it's right across from Caesars, and they would add on. Well, when they built the Mirage, Wynn thought he was losing his eyesight. So I was staying, I think, at Caesars, and I'd go along that back place because I went and played handball every day. And so these, because they had a lot of great handball players, I just went and got yourself a game. And some guys I'd play against, I knew I could beat. And other guys, hey, you need a game? I'm looking at the guy going, I don't know if I really want to. I get my ass kicked, basically. But because there were some A players, there were some good people. Anyway, but they had, I never saw anything like it. You compare that, Maddie, if you were to compare, and this is before people had cell phones with pictures. If I'd have taken a picture of that parking lot and a picture of the people building the Mirage and compared that to the Jane Byrne Expressway episode, you would say, what the hell? They were pouring a floor every 3 days, guys. Now imagine that. It was the first one that was built totally with the elevators in the middle with the big, huge three different wings coming out the side. It was the first place that was built that size from the ground up. Just, we're going to build something in that place. And everybody was, even in Vegas, they were stunned that anybody would put that kind of money into a place. But he wanted to see this before his eyes went bad. So there had to be hundreds of people working on this thing. I mean, and they were pouring, like I said, a floor every 3 days, which is unbelievable. So Siegfried, up until that time, if you wanted a ticket for to see Johnny Carson or anybody, you could just go to any one of the places really off the street, and you could buy a ticket. Well, they said, no, that's not going to happen for Siegfried and Roy. The ticket office was in the middle of the casino. And I was having a cocktail downtown, of course. We were at a seminar down there, and the guy says to me, I was in the finance department. He goes, we put the ticket office in the middle of the casino, and we figured that every person that came in there, man, woman, and child, we spent $21.62 getting to the place and back, gambling or doing something. And they had it down to a rat's behind. And they were his nut the first day he opened the door. This is back in 1980, maybe. Maybe I don't know when the Mirage opened. What do you suppose their nut was per day, Frank?
I have no idea.
It was the first time anybody in Vegas, his nut per day was $1 million.
Wow. The answer to your question about, you were thinking of the Flamingo.
The Flamingo. That's where, what's his name, got blasted.
The Mirage opened November 22nd, 1989.
Okay. Yeah, and they were $1 million a day was their nut. And everybody thought he was nuts. Everybody else had a place, paid for the first part, got another loan, added on. He just went right for the jugular. Went straight out after it. And like, what, was it 2 years later, he built the place next to it, the Treasure Island, right? Because he didn't have enough room in the Mirage for people.
And some people decided to go to Atlantic City.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know,
I don't know.
I don't know if they ever really got the Midwest crowd. If you were in a plane, you'd still rather go to Vegas. Atlantic City, I went there a couple times, but the one, Matty, you would not have seen this. You would not have believed this. This is, you know, about the same time. There had to be 500 buses out in front of these places. Every little town in Pennsylvania, New York, every little blue-haired old lady and guy was on one of these buses. That was their shtick during the week, was just dragging people from these small towns on a bus. I don't know how many people from here flew to Atlantic City. I mean, some, just because it was new, but I think Vegas you could go 3-4 times a year, the weather and everything else. I mean, Atlantic City, if you walked out the wrong door to a place, you're in a slum. And it never really included the rest of the place. Anyway, Frank, we got to talk about the market and the rest of the world. I was doing some shopping this weekend. Prices are up. I went to the Peoria market. I couldn't even get in at 5 after 7, or people lined up down the block. I'd say that the people who frequent that place, which is mostly minority, I am serious minority when I go there. I think there's a huge food desert everywhere, Frank, especially in some of these areas. Then I went to the Restaurant Depot. They were pretty much out of meat. There's shortages. Prices are going straight up. Just saying.
I went to Elburn, Illinois, to a country butcher out there, a big country butcher, and they were limiting you to 5 packages of chicken, and the beef selection wasn't as big as usual, but I mean, a chuck roast was $4.59 a pound, which is pretty standard for what it's been the past 6 months.
Yeah, I'll bet their next load in is higher.
And they do some of their own butchering, too.
Yeah.
Also, on the north west side, on like around Addison and Highland, there's an old school butcher shop, and they had everything you needed on Saturday, according to people I talked to.
I think you went to Elburn because you couldn't wait to get out of the house.
Oh, I did.
Yes.
And
you wouldn't care if it was Seattle at that point. People are getting stir crazy.
It's a world class butcher shop.
Yes,
they win national championships for the brats.
Did you ever stop by that place up in Brandon, Wisconsin, the Brandon Meat Market, where you call ahead and they'll do a whole cow or pig or anything for you? That place.
No,
my
go to
awesome
up
too.
North is in Sheboygan, Meesfields.
Wow.
So,
yeah, those dudes. A matter of fact, you can call up and you can tell them what kind of cow you want. Well, he's half grass fed, you know, grain fed, wherever you want. They'll do whatever you want and grab that guy and ixnay him. Hey, I was, unfortunately somewhat prophetic last Monday. I was kidding.
I'm hoping you're saying prophetic and not pathetic.
It ended up being pathetic, but I remember I was telling you I was driving by the forest preserves and it was a nice day and how many people there were in the fishing hole and all this kind of stuff. And I said, all we're taking was all the new Gladys Kravitzes of the world to send a picture into somebody that people were too close together and having a good time. Sure enough, parking lots were closed yesterday on weekends.
I was out yesterday, and a large number of parking lots were open.
They were. Some of the places, for just general forest preserves, they were open, but some of the spots where people were gathering were like the fishing hole parking, those were closed.
And everything around Swallow Cliffs has been closed because
yes.
They're closing the places where people have not been following the guidelines. I do enough birding, so I'm pretty well up on it. And the weekends have been much more aggressive on closing it down. But last week, the only ones closed were the ones circling Swallow Cliffs.
So what, because you don't want people, you know, walking up and down the steps. God knows, you don't want that. By the way, if I read somewhere where a bird got this disease, am I going to be worried about you giving it to him?
No, no.
You're not.
By the way, we did go. We got tests in Markham to see if we had COVID or 19 or allergies yesterday. No line.
So if you find out you already had it, are you going to lose it? Ugly mask you're wearing?
In fact, no, because it makes other people feel more comfortable. You know, ugly mask, ugly face, I don't know. What's the choice?
What if you had to put a 10-pound weight on your head to feel to make somebody else feel more comfortable? Would you do it?
No, but a half-ounce mask, I will.
I read somewhere I'm going to say imbecile, writes this thing and said, assume that every person without a mask is a asymptomatic death machine or something like that. I'm like, what are you talking about? Just whatever. I mean, they've got people so afraid on this, I can't even go there, Frank. But anyway, market's down 18. I don't know if we stay down. What are you seeing here? What's going to happen if we get if they stop lying to us and give us a hot CPI report? What are we going to get? By the way, I sent you that thing about the unemployed people and how some people are making an awful lot more than when they normally work. Although I would say, if you lay somebody off temporarily, and I think what's happened is people are going from the temporarily to the other, if you lay somebody off temporarily, do you normally dump their hospitalization or do you keep it? I don't know. I mean, to me, the idea that somebody's making more on unemployment, the reason for this is the federal government.
I think you're assuming that an awful lot of people, more people have hospitalization than they really do.
Well, my list here that I say, here's what's happening, is every state has their own formula, correct? And the formula is, you know, it is what it is. In Illinois, if you're making, the max is what, 1,800, it's 440 a week or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
So it's close to 1,800. And but now the federal government is dumped a $600, essentially, for lack of a better term, bonus on that, right? So you make, so you make $2,400 a month. So it ends up being, here, I got the per hour number here. You end up making essentially, $21 an hour on unemployment in Illinois, I think.
That's what McDonald's pays in Denmark.
Let's see.
Move on.
It's actually 24. The wage replacement rate is 20, roughly 24, 21. And the people who make 24 are postal service clerks, by the way. So here's the people that are making more, shampooers. I guess, I didn't know there was such a thing as a shampooer, but I guess there is. They make $11 an hour. Fast food, $11. Amusement attendance, $12. What are those people? I mean, I guess that's, people who work at Sox Park or something. I don't know. Cashiers, $12. Home health aides, 13. Bartenders, 13. Retail salespeople, 14. All these people are now making, if they're unemployed, they're making more. But the thing that is not privy to this, if you have a family, I have to believe your hospitalization is $1,500 with a crummy. Now, if you're somebody who
is, it's going to be $1,500 a month, and it won't cover anything. Really,
well, but I mean, if you are a
cashier
making $12 an hour, I think you get help on your hospitalization if you're not covered at work. Correct? I mean, Obamacare, they pick up part of it.
Tom, we're talking distinctly Chicago approach to this, thinking the cashiers have hospitalization. In the bulk of the country, they don't.
Retail salespeople, some do. They're $14 an hour.
I would think it's a minority, a significant minority.
Well, either way, I mean, if you're making $12 an hour and you're buying your own insurance and paying, you're getting some help from the government, right? If you make it under a certain amount.
If you can remember to sign up for Obamacare.
So if you've got Obamacare and say you're making $12 an hour and you've got, maybe after you might know this, and you're going to get help with the insurance, correct? So now all of a sudden if you're on unemployment making 24, do they take the help away on the insurance, or they don't know, or you don't tell them?
I have no idea how that system works.
Or if they talk to each other. I bet they don't talk to each other. I bet you can stay on the getting help.
I think there's a six-month limit, or a July 1st limit on the $600.
Yeah, I think there is, too. Yeah, and it's going to kick back up. So anyway, this is, when people are complaining that people make, whatever, too much or whatever. But
I might complain that we don't have tests for antibodies.
Well,
if you want it, you can have it. I've looked for it. I can't find it.
Now, if you were on the Bulls, you'd have it?
Knowing some people that are on unemployment, there ain't nobody making more than they were making before that I know. Not even close. Not even half.
All right, well, I'm saying the break
this
even.
This is like the welfare mother urban myth.
Yeah, this is
she has 57 kids so that she can make $100,000 a year.
This is the first I've ever heard of anyone
making
more.
These are people that, what do you think? They're people that want to be outraged.
I'm not being outraged. I'm saying it's a $600.
Knowing people, two people that are that filed for unemployment in the last month that are getting checks, they're making about half of what they would normally make.
Okay, now are they counting in the $600 a week they're going to get from the Fed? They're not getting that yet.
They're not getting that. That's the first I've heard of that.
Okay, the relief in the arm, no one's a carry at hand.
In fact, one of them hasn't gotten the $1,200 yet.
Right. Well, it's 18. If you're making, the max in the state is 18. There's a formula that I won't go into because I'm too early for that. So the relief law known as the CARES Act enhanced unemployment benefits in several ways. It boosted weekly benefits, increased their duration, and extended jobless pay to previously ineligible group like the self-employed. The law offered an extra 600 hours a week funded by federal government to unemployed recipients. So if you add the 600 hours a week, which is $2,400 a month, to the maximum 18 here, you're up to $3,200, which is essentially $20 an hour, right? Which is the number I'm using.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know if that's a separate application or they get that check later.
So the
or
600
what?
Extra is from what? June to July?
I think
so it's probably a few months. It's for 1 month?
No, it's probably, I think it was from March or April to end of June or something.
Well, it's not March or April, because I don't know anyone that's getting that.
Well, I think a lot of times when you sign up for that stuff, you get your check later and it covers a bunch of weeks.
That could be.
I said, I don't know if it's a separate application. I'm just saying that is part of this act. I don't know whether everybody's already getting it.
No, it's not a separate application. It's part of unemployment.
Okay, so I mean, it's so at the end of the day, if you're making $11 an hour, you're now making double essentially. You're saying it's why
it's probably like winning the lotto.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I said if you were getting hospitalization, now you don't. You're a loser, even though you're making more. Is what I'm
right, saying. And I would think that. Gosh, if your employer's paying for anything, you probably aren't getting unemployment.
Well, if you're still getting paid, right, you're not. But how many people
do
you know, Maddie, that were allegedly still getting paid, now they're not? A few.
That's right.
So, I mean, that's a lot of that happened when Jay... I think if he shoves it another month, you're absolute carnage on people. The numbers jump again. But here's the amount of people that are already unemployed is really something. It's off the... Talking about off the chart, we can find the graph that was, let's see, Nebraska, Oklahoma. Here's by job. What's the number one? You guys will get this. Number one, 7,653,000 people. Which industry is that?
Wait, restaurant.
Leisure.
Hospitality.
Leisure and hospitality. Ding, ding, ding. Education and health services, 2.5. Professional and business services, must be barbers and everybody, 2.1. Retail trade, 2.1. Manufacturing, 1.3. Other services, 1.2. Government, 980. Construction, 975. Transportation, warehousing, 584. Blah, blah, blah. So there you go. So, I mean, it's all over the place. And, it's not. So what
see symptoms on that article you sent me about the bidding process on homes. Or the antidote.
That wasn't me, I don't think. Who was that?
Where people bid on homes to freeze the home while they're
living. Yeah, that's becoming a Southside way of doing business, let's put it that way.
It's a national way of doing business.
It is caught fire in the hood. If you put stuff, I know people that were offering houses for sale like in bad neighborhoods. People will call up and they'll say, I'll buy it, and write a contract up. And they go look at it and say, I don't want it. wait a minute. There's no kind. It's like the Chinese, everybody always blames them. They buy soybeans, and the price of soybean goes down, the ship's halfway there, and they say they don't want it. That's kind of their way of doing business. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, brand an entire nationality, but I know people that have sold beans and corn, mostly beans, overseas, and they say the Vietnamese, word is their ban. Thai people, word is their ban. Chinese, not so much. Just saying. I mean, it's not politically correct, probably, but I think it's probably true. Anyway, so Frank, what are we doing? How can we continue to walk up here on the market? And I mean, I don't want to lead you into it, but what are we doing here with the money pouring into the system? I mean, it's
obviously going into the market. It's going to create inflation. You and I have noticed that. And 85% of the S&P companies have already declared earnings, and they've stunk. Right now, the P.E. ratio is the highest it's been since 2002. So the earnings have been horrible, and we're going back up. I don't know. It's outside of my realm of understanding.
Well, how would you like to be one of the guys on national TV having to talk 12 hours a day trying to find reasons that the market is going up because you can't mention it's going up because of the Fed? I mean, the market really thinks that we're way better off now than we were at the beginning of the year. Duh. I mean, can anybody possibly think that?
The market's up 1.7%. So it was even on Friday morning, and it's up 1.7%.
You're talking about the NASDAQ,
the S&P 500.
NASDAQ, too. Russell's, I think, still down a little bit. But oil companies are still way down, obviously. Although, the oil prices have creeped
up. We're up 30% in 6 weeks.
Yeah. What do you...
Look at the charts after the crash in 1929. I think we see something similar, don't we?
Well, no, because the Fed didn't pour money back in.
Yeah, but there was a big rally.
Yes.
I believe.
They thought it was, then when the bank started closing, the rally was over. The real disaster didn't happen until 1932 when all the banks closed, right?
Exactly.
Well, there was underpinnings there. I mean, there were the agricultural world was in a depression really for 10 years before that. There was things pulling out, you know, under the bottom of everything. If our supply chain, let me ask you this. What do you think the lead time is? If every governor were just going to say, okay, let's all go back to work, which you really couldn't do because people are going to get sick. What do you think the lead time is for things being somewhat normal? Where people just saying, okay, I'll go back to work.
I have no idea. I think it's probably within a month after we have readily accessible testing for antigens. Otherwise, people like you and I are truly rolling the dice.
Well, that's the truth. But
yeah, kill me.
What is Frank?
Can't write the life, they write the birth, but they don't care about old people.
No, we got to get you off Social Security. That way we've solved the system's problems by you and I being croaked. Anyway, take care of yourself, bud. Talk to you next week. SP Futures down 20. NASDAQ is now 31. Down a little bit. We were way up last week, though. We'll be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. It's Matt Weber on the board of Mr. John Flanagan in the wings, just like if it's a Siegfried and Roy event. He's like one of the white tigers in the wings. S&P futures down 20, 50, NASDAQ futures down 32. Did you ever see those guys, Matty, when you went to the Mirage?
No.
God.
They had the advertising everywhere, but I never got one.
Talking about just the tigers just hanging there.
No.
Yeah, they're big as a bug. Those things are huge. I mean, they are snow white. I mean, it's... You don't want to mess with one of those boys, I don't think. Where are we at here? The Dow's up down 174. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 65, so not much. Almost 0.6%. FTSE's down 7, call that flat. CAC around down 55, 1.2. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei up to 11, that's 1%. Shanghai down 54 cents, let's call that one flat. Hang Seng up 371, 1.5%. Bonds, 0.69, so right about where we've been. One minus 0.51, right about where we went. Japan, the Japan up 0.007. That's where we're positive. That's, I don't know, that's something. Oil down 64 cents, but 24.10. Brent down 90 cents, 30.07. So the curve going out is flattened considerably. Still in contango, where next year is over 30, but still it's better than 11 to 30. 24 to 32 is not near as bad. Natural gas 183, down significantly from the $2 a week ago. RBOB 94 cents. And we've got gold down 11 bucks at 17.02. Silver down 17 cents, 15.60. Maybe we got forced traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have an issue coming in on I-57, Chief, northbound just before 103rd Street. There's an accident blocking the two right lanes that apparently is involving a pedestrian. Not sure how that would happen, but not good for I-57 or for that pedestrian, for that matter. 80 to Dan Ryan is up to 35 minutes.
I'm taking the truck one, that one.
Yeah. Accidents blocking the two right lanes as crews work to get that cleared, and that's our issue coming in on any of the expressways right now. Other than that, nice and quiet out there. There is an exit ramp closed on the Edens eastbound side, which is the inbound side of the Edens at Skokie Road, so keep that in mind. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds, cold, blustery, just a miserable day, but we're used to that. About 20 degrees below normal. Partly cloudy skies, a high of just 46. Right now it's cloudy and 40 today, going up to a high of 46. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 99. Right now it's mostly clear and 77. In sports, on this date in sports history, May 11th, no real significant sporting accomplishments on this date for whatever reason, but a very sad story that happened on this date. In 1985, Bradford City football game over in the UK. 56 died and at least 265 were injured at a Bradford City football game in the worst fire in English football history. Do you remember that story? I remember
vaguely,
seeing a documentary on it.
Vaguely, yeah.
And somehow the fans got trapped in there, and it was handled very poorly by the stadium management. You know, no surprise there. And the fans got trapped, and it was a really, really tragic undertaking. But yeah, that was on this date in 1985.
There's only one guy to remember this more than I will. And he's Mr. John Flanagan out in the wings. John, what was the theater fire in Chicago?
Oh, the Iroquois Theater.
Yeah.
Where the current Nederlander, the old Oriental, it's the same exact footprint of the Iroquois, same location. And 1903.
Maddie, in those
days, 600 people killed. They're not sure really how many. They never got a good accounting of the casualties because people were taking loved ones' bodies home on the streetcars and the cable cars before they were counted. It's just a horrific thing.
So what do you suppose, Maddie, was the the advance after that?
Fire escape?
No. In those days, the doors all opened in.
Oh, right. Wow, yeah.
Your panic doors, I mean, your doors to any place now that's a place, open out. People got squashed up against the door. They couldn't open the doors in because so many people were...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And so now if you go flying out of any place, the doors always open out.
Plus, there were no exit signs.
Right.
Any of the exits. The theater just opened like 6 weeks before that in a big hurry, and they waived all the zoning inspections so they could start making money during the Christmas holidays. So there were no identified exits. You know, people had no idea where to go.
I dug up a story here, Jan, because we've talked, you know, from time to time, and I think, two things that strike me this morning is, because now we're talking about Germany has an increase of an infection rate as they try and reopen. Well, I think if you are trying to reopen things at the same time you're expanding your testing, I'm going to say you have a statistical problem going to stare you in the face.
Unresolvable tension.
Yeah, let's just say there's a those two ships are coming at each other in the middle of the night, wouldn't you say, Manny? I mean,
your data is going to expand, of course.
And we have talked on the show, and you know, I think we're somewhat critical about some of our politicians. God, I've been listening. But I'm saying I've been listening to some of these other places, and they're swearing at people, and they're accusing them of, like, killing people on purpose. I mean, what are they doing?
Oh, yeah, it's gotten quite ugly.
I mean, we don't go anywhere near there. I mean, tongue-in-cheek, I mean, we'll you know, obviously, if you make poor decisions here, you are talking about, you know, lives and so forth. I mean, you know, it's funny how, let me ask you this question. In today's world, you know, everybody knows about D-Day and the success it was or, you know, whatever. And everybody forgets all the mistakes. I think we'd ever forget them. The mistake I'm talking about was Eisenhower decided to have a practice run somewhere in England, and he decided to use live fire.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I think, didn't more people die in the practice run than almost as many? I won't say more. Almost as many. Plus, the Germans found out about it and torpedoed a few of the boats, right?
Right. There was an intelligence leak.
Yeah.
That made it worse.
So they ended up losing all these people in the practice run. I don't see how today ever that Eisenhower would have hung in there and led that Normandy. Would you?
No. And my dad, he was not at Normandy, but he was in the Battle of the Bulge, and he really restrained his enthusiasm for Eisenhower in conversations I had with him. He never quite understood how he survived, let alone became, you know, Supreme Allied Commander, because he didn't think he was anything like Patton or a number of other people who should have had that job. And that he always said it was because he had a German-sounding surname. It made him a way of demoralizing the Germans. Here's somebody with your kind of name fighting against you, and that was his biggest claim to fame. He wasn't a great tactician or a leader in my dad's eyes, and I think a lot of other GIs shared that same opinion.
Well, he screwed up in Africa,
yep.
Pretty much, and I think Omar Bradley would have been a much better choice.
Absolutely.
But the choice came down to between Ike and George Marshall. And George Marshall, he was the five-star general. He was the number one guy, but he was in charge of logistics pretty much all over the world and sending people wherever he was, which he was amazingly good at, hence the Marshall Plan and all the other stuff he did. And Roosevelt just said, I need you here. And like they said, you know, Grant became president. Grant's, you know, chief organizer didn't become president. It was a guy who had the field committee. It was almost like today's, you got to be a TV star to become president. You got to be, you're fired or something like Trump.
Right.
You know, and, I mean, if you were the general, nobody cared whether you did anything or the people below you did it or you were the best one or not. If you got all if you got the accolades, you got the job. And sure enough, you know, I would say the world would be different and maybe better if George Marshall would have been president instead of Ike.
Oh, I'm with you. I think he was a much more talented guy. He had done more. Really, I think as a general, and
oh, yeah.
You know, and his capabilities, just his thinking power, was much better than Ike's.
You know where he made his Well, he had had a bunch of things where people knew that he was special. I think he had went to, where did he go? He went to VMI, right?
I believe. Lee? No, Ike went to Columbia. I think he was president of Columbia.
No, Marshall went to VMI.
Oh, Marshall, yes. I'm sorry.
He didn't go to West Point. So he comes out, and his thing was logistics. And in World War One, on the this is one of the quotes I'll never forget ever about armies or soldiers and, you know, how losers can make really dumb quotes. His biggest thing was that when the Americans went over World War One, it took a while before they were trained and blah blah blah. They wanted to outflank the best day ever for the war to turn the tide against the Germans, where everybody attacked in the middle, and the Americans were part of that attack. I don't know how many people they lost there or whatever, but it was his job that in the morning he had to move an entire division on a 2-lane dirt road with other people on it, horses and carts and stuff, the farmers trying to get the hell out of there. I don't know how many miles to the other side, to down the road, and have the Americans attack essentially where there were no trenches around the side and outflank them, where there wasn't anybody there in the morning. So the idea was, hey, here's the Americans in the middle. We don't have to worry about our right side, essentially. He moved the entire division. He put the plan together where he moved them down this 2-lane road, and they attacked in the afternoon on the other end. And it was more like Army crosses and God knows what else they hand out that day, like, and ever. It was like the 1st Division or something. So they had this, the end of the day, the guy comes up and congratulates him and said, he says, this is a great day. You should be proud of yourself. And he goes, how the hell is it a great day? 9 of my best friends are dead. What's the matter with you? I mean, it was a military victory, but he goes, 9 of my best friends are dead. Don't tell me it was a good day. And I'm glad we won, obviously, but, you know, I mean, what are you talking about? Any day of war is never a good day. Except if you're what they used to call the guys in World War One or in Vietnam, Chicken Hawks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the novel All Quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah.
You know, remark that, you know, the hero that you've gotten to know through this whole novel, you know, you've watched this guy grow up and see him go off to war, and he gets, you know, killed in the closing days of the war. And
the last day, wasn't it?
It was all quiet on the Western Front. You know, nothing happened today.
Yeah, like the last
our hero just got killed.
Yeah, the last bullet that came flying by nailed that guy.
Right.
But Manny, how would this land on your psyche? You know how they knew when there was going to be an advance or an attack?
How?
They would have shipment after shipment of pine boxes. So they already knew that they were planning for the dead people, and they go, all right, when are we gonna have our advance? And somebody
that'd
say, it's Wednesday. How gross is that? I mean, it's just...
Yeah, that'd be rough.
And anyway, John, we have... I was reading a whole bunch of stuff all weekend, as usual. And by the way, socially, I want to let you know that there's panic in some of these stores and stuff that's shortages. Not all, but I notice at the Peoria Market and at the two places I went was mostly minority. And I don't know. I think that there's the normal food desert in the black neighborhoods is probably really bad now. I'm just saying.
I would think so too.
You know, there was no meat at the Restaurant Depot.
Well, you already have a bad situation where, you know, food retailers are scarce. Even in my neighborhood, I consider it's hard for me to get, you know, I don't own a car anymore. I have to get around by foot or by bus to shop. So I'm conscious of how hard it is to find an affordable grocery store. And you go there, and the staples that you expect to buy are in short supply or non-existent. So, you know, you take a food desert, now you turn it into what? The food. Like I'm, you know, waiting for Godot. There's nothing.
I love going to Peoria Market, and as my friend Alice used to call me, her favorite Peckerwood. Let's just say I'm one of the only Peckerwoods in the joint. Is that a fair statement? So one day, this is funny. I was going to buy some rib tips, right? Because I love barbecue, and I see this black lady, and she's going through these rib tips like there's, I mean, they all look the same to me, pretty much. And so she's digging and digging and digging, and she pulls out three that must have been way better than the rest. So I look there, and I go, you know, you got a couple of choices here. She goes, what's that? I said, well, I can either mug you for your rib tips or you can help me pick out three. She goes, oh, I'll help you out. No problem. She digging through there. She loved it. I mean, she thought I was funny, but I mean, I don't know if the ones she picked out were any better than the other ones, but you know, in her mind they were, but just saying. The, anyway, we have this hardship going around, Jen, is not even. I don't see how this all comes back together. I went through by shopping center after shopping center. Everything's closed. I mean, I don't know how you... And people are absolutely afraid. People are afraid. Every one of our contributors to the show, shall we say, he went to see his ex-wife on Mother's Day with, you know, one of the children, and they sat outside. She wouldn't let him in the house. And, I mean, this is somewhat crazed. Frank dropped some stuff over at Audrey's, and he didn't come in the house.
It's, man, I just—I that's one of the real, you know, the in all this reset, because I don't know what else to call this now, but a complete reset of everything, the way we trust people, the way we trust strangers, you know, the way we perceive who a stranger is, even is going to be different when this thing plays out over the next, what, 5 years? I mean, I don't see any, you know, halt in the way this is going. And as you mentioned earlier about the testing, you know, mania to get as many people tested as possible, that's just another method of moving the goalpost to make the numbers look like they're going in the wrong direction, and we can't go into phase three of our reopening plan or whatever until we get numbers like this. And the more you test and the more cases you discover, the less likely that stage three is ever going to come around at all. And even, you know, the way these things are worded and looking at how the map of Illinois, for example, has been carved up, what this really means is that nothing is going to be approaching normal until not only is there a vaccine, which is what's being held out as the crucial time marker.
40 years.
You're going to force everybody to get the vaccine and to provide on demand proof of having received the vaccine. Well, that's never going to happen. It will never happen in my lifetime, or, you know, people 10 generations from now. It's not going to happen.
It's been Forty years since there was going to be an AIDS vaccine. There still isn't one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm waiting any day now, you know, to get it. But, you know, it's not going to happen in my lifetime if it hasn't happened yet. So we wouldn't expect or demand or plan on having a vaccine for any viral infection that I'm aware of, at least on any kind of a timetable.
When are you going to find...
To return to normal life. So who's kidding who?
If or when are you going to find out our politicians tell you that they were wrong?
Well, that won't happen either. I mean,
I'm not.
I mean, they will go down in defeat before they. They will be singing another tune as long as they can get away with it. And because once they admit they made a mistake, they're toast. So they're never going to do that.
Well, I don't think they made a mistake in when it came at us so fast, not knowing the treatment options. The last thing you could not have a situation where ambulances are pulling up in front of hospitals, nowhere to go. So. When they shut things down, and I'm going to say St. Patrick's Day, I'm going to give that one to them. All right, that they had to do that because you found out so late. And I have I just heard this weekend from one of my friends, his brother-in-law was just tested positive with the antibodies, and I think he was early January. Now his wife is absolutely convinced she had it, and if she comes back positive, I think it was Thanksgiving weekend, Jen, way before our guys are telling anybody had this thing. Now, I don't know where she works or who could possibly have been from China or wherever the hell they were from, but everything I read now just says, well, there's a lot of good news, okay? There's a lot of bad news. The good news is we are doing way better at treating people. And maybe we'll get a little bit better, but right now we're not putting people on ventilators as quick. Some of these drugs are helping out. Some of you are out of the hospital in 11 days instead of 14. People who wouldn't have got out are getting out. So there's seriously positive news for older people like maybe you and me. Okay, so there's a chance if we get it, we're not going to croak. Pretty good chance. But you're left with a disease. The first time I read this, I mean, this is months ago now, I read the story from Germany, and they say, for the first 2 or 3 days, this thing is 1,000 times more communicable by mucus than SARS. Then, as soon as you get symptoms, your body starts to react to it. Your whatever goes down, and a lot of people never even know they had it. As soon as I read that, Jen, how infectious people are when they don't even know they had it, and our people started doing all this stuff, I'm going, they're pissing up the wrong rope. Containment is not an option once it's out there, and it's out there. It just isn't an option. You can shut people up in their house, and then 6 weeks later, you'll be like Governor Cuomo, say, man, most of the people that are being tested positive now have been home. Duh. I mean, you just shove the stuff home. And then you have Lori Lightfoot saying, I'm stunned it's in the Hispanic community. Why? There's multi-generational families. More people live at home than in other areas. So when you open up this factory, say we open up our widget factory, the thought of 150 people, 200 people coming back to work, and in the first 2 weeks, they're not to be an occurrence of one person and us having to shut it down for another 3 weeks, clean it all up, make sure everybody comes back. Jen, that is a non-starter. Somehow every single spot, maybe it's every building, every factory, has to say, maybe you test people coming in the first day or whatever you do, and you say, all right, if you got it, if you got a home to go to or by yourself, go home and come back in 14 days or 10 days or whatever. If you got people at your house, by the way, we just bought the no-tell motel over there. Go hang there, or we'll put up, you know, tents out here, and you can stay here. Whatever it is, the chances of that being in that place, if you have enough people, is going to happen. We're going to, now, 80% of the people who get it don't really have any kind of symptoms. They can continue to work, right? There's, out of the other 20%, 15% have nasty issues for 10 days. It's a bad couple of weeks, but they survive. And then there's the 5% you have problems with. Some need to be hospitalized, some don't. Some need some drugs, some don't. And a few of those don't make it. Those are the numbers. Yeah. So the idea that we're going to reopen a Ford plant and 500 people are going to show up, and in the first 2 weeks there's not one incidence, considering it's everywhere in society, is absolutely a fool's thought.
Well, you can see how this is going to play out in stopping or reversing any kind of attempt to, you know, free up factories, you know, retail establishments, whatever. You've noticed, I'm sure as I have, that when they give, you know, the case numbers in the news broadcast, it depends what kind of time of day you tune in, who's giving it, but it's always in terms of in the last 24 hours. You know, we have this many more new cases, we have this many more fatalities, this many more hospitalizations, whatever. And it's, you know, they can chop those numbers up across the state in lots of ways, across the country and everything else, but it's always in the last 24 hours. And you get a floating number. If you tune in 2 hours later, that number has changed. You've moved the markers in a different way. And if you see a spike in that, it doesn't necessarily mean that there is an ascending number of cases overall, because you're changing when you start computing the 24-hour period. And this is not meaningful in terms of getting a bigger picture. And you can choose any 24-hour period you like where the numbers really went up and say, look at what we had here. Well, that doesn't mean that's a trend or indicative of anything other than these numbers look the way we wanted them to look, and that's why we're peddling them. And it's the first time at a Ford plant or something else, and I guess the Ford plant here has reopened on a limited basis from what I read. I read this a couple days ago. I'm not sure what that means or how they're
enforcing
social distancing, but all you'll need is a couple cases that spike in the wrong direction, and you'll see that whole plant, that whole, you know, whatever plan was in place there to do this, will be used as an example of what we cannot do, you know, going into the future. And so then you go back and vet it, and you fiddle around until you get something 6 months or a year from now that seems to work for everybody. And that's a pointless thing to try to develop. It's got to be on an ad hoc basis, and it's going to be different in different industries and in different localities and everything else.
I think that,
so why are we using this data to make a clampdown for
everything?
That
Ford plant is not going to be good to go till it's a year from now, and 80% of the people in the place have already had it.
and have vaccines in whatever form they've taken.
I'm going to say, supposedly,
you're being protected against, which I put zero confidence in anyway.
I'm going to say
But it's going to take some artificial things like that to get people to hire people and to bring them back and put them on salary. I don't see this happening, short term.
Plus, you can't be in a situation where one person in the plant shows positive that you send 800 people home again. You can't do that. I don't know how I can say this nicely, because we said we're going to be nicer than other people. The last thing I need is somebody on TV who's getting paid by me telling me he's not going back to work until there's a vaccine, because guess what? It could be 30 years and there's not a vaccine for this thing. If there is, tomorrow when somebody comes up with one, I'm the happiest man alive. Well, everybody's happy. But you know what, John? If it happens, I'm a jockey in the fifth race today. I mean, if it happens, it happens. But, to count on that when we don't have anything like that, a vaccine or for anything else, I don't see how you even do that.
Right. It's just a way of saying we don't want to talk about this now or ever.
Well, as long as you just keep my checks coming. S&P futures down 31, NASDAQ futures down 70. We're leaking a little bit. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Wah, bam, 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 bam,
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. Little Richard, for those of you that don't know, as he passed the other day. I don't think he was, Roy actually had symptoms of COVID. I don't think Little Richard had that. He had,
I didn't hear it mentioned in the bits, but.
Anyway, talking about a pioneer, 87 pioneer, huh? I mean, the Stones, everybody learned a lot from Little Richard, boy, huh? SP Futures down 29, NASDAQ Futures down 65. A couple things, Jan. We have talked, actually, maybe not talked since you've been on the air, but I used to talk a lot about Chinese dollar-denominated debt as being our Achilles heel, because I don't think the government of China gives a rat's behind about their dollar-denominated debt. And it kind of ties into what Warren Buffett said last week, is the U.S. will never default because all their debt is in their own currency and they can just make more of it. So they'll always pay you. It might not be worth anything, but you'll get paid, which is a little scary in itself. But for years and years, and actually, was it the Republicans got in office? Oh, they couldn't wait to get rid of the Import-Export Bank, right, Jan?
Right.
And then, of course, they didn't, because, you know, Boeing and everybody else that pays all these people, Democrats and Republicans alike. The more people think that these guys are all different, you're not different when you take money from the same people. Right, Jen? You can say you are to try and get votes, and you can say whatever you want, but if you're taking money from the same people, on a lot of issues, shall we say, you're similarly disposed. How's that for a term this early in the morning? it was pretty good, wasn't it? Similarly disposed? I like that.
It's not bad.
So the Import-Export Bank for years actually worked pretty well. I'll give you a real quick story on how it worked. Pullman, at the time when I was there, owned a Kellogg, and they also owned Swindell. Now, Kellogg ended up being part of Kellogg Brown and Root, which is Cheney's...
Halliburton.
Yeah, Halliburton. Got bought by Halliburton. And Swindell made industrial stacks. I mean, don't ever go somewhere where there's a bunch of engineers and call a chimney a chimney. It's a stack, if it's a big thing, right? I don't know if you knew that, John, but that's a stack.
No,
it's not a chimney. If you call it a chimney, they know you're...
It's not a smokestack.
No. Well, it's a stack. It might be smoke coming out of it, but anyway. But when Kellogg designed refineries and all kinds of stuff for people in the Middle East and anywhere. And so the idea of the Import-Export Bank was that if Saudi or somebody wanted to put a refinery up or whatever, could be a pumping station for the oil, whatever it is. I mean, Kellogg was an engineering firm. They would design that, and that the money to build the place would come from the Import-Export Bank. Okay, and it would be, because Robin was involved in a lot of this stuff at Pullman. She's been a contributor in Stacks and Jacks a few times. And bright lady. I mean, they would put work this for the Import-Export Bank, and Pullman would come up with $100 million for these guys to build this plant. But now the plant had revenue to it. So it wasn't like it was a debt to the Saudi government. I don't know. Robin could tell you if it was guaranteed or not. But by and large, if it's a refinery or it's a pumping, they were getting paid for what they were doing, pipeline or whatever. So your Import-Export Bank got paid back from the revenue from the completed project, sort of like, you know, Hoover Dam and electricity and so forth. But the thing of it was is it gave the U.S., and this is the political part of it, it gave us a foothold. We not only help people, we're getting money from them, we're in like a tick on a dog, basically, in that area. And we have now Import-Export Bank, and I don't know the percentages, it's kind of morphed into something where if some place that can't pay necessarily, we might sell them Boeing fighter jets or somebody, and they'll use the fighter jets. Who knows if we ever get paid by the government. But they still do the regular stuff. I mean, I think they finance some Boeing passenger planes and so forth. Now, whether that's comes back on a lease to the plane to the airline or it's the government, you know, I don't know how that all works. But anyway, we've been doing this for a while. When I say we, the U.S. government. Now, lately, in the last, what do you say, 10 years, Jan, 20 years, China has tried to flex their muscles in the third world somewhat the same way, to be in like a tick on a dog with these places, build a relationship, become a preferred provider of other kinds of stuff. God knows whatever it is you're making. and they call it this Belt and Road Initiative, right, Jen?
Right.
Where they end up, but I think most of these, the countries are borrowing directly. It's pretty hard, like, you know, when Pullman was doing it, the Import-Export Bank, they were shrewd enough. I mean, if you build a dam that's providing electricity and you're paid basically on the sale of the electricity, that's one thing. If you decide you're going to lend money to God knows where, Sri Lanka, and the money's coming from the government and they don't really have any, and all of a sudden they're building roads and everything else, I think your chances of getting paid off are a little less. Right?
Right, and just reading the things that were passed around this weekend from Kevin and you, you know, some of these countries appear to have, you know, their debts to China denominated in oil.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I can't imagine that's a good deal for the Chinese right now. But if you don't have any other wealth or, you know, any other liquid asset, no pun intended, that you can use to pay off your debts, you pay in what you have, for better or worse. You know, I think that, you know, the mindset of the Chinese does mimic what the mindset of the U.S. was. You know, going back, you know, probably for most of the 20th century, when it came to planting, you know, a foot in some far-flung place of the world and, you know, giving, you know, preferential treatment to a corporation or a conglomerate or a trust or whatever else to make money there and allow for cheap importation of stuff to the U.S. But it also meant that you were building your own empire that required a military that would defend these places and, you know, keep relations good with the host country. And of course, this record that the U.S. has to show, and other European countries too. China is, you know, used for the same model as the Brits and the U.S. and a bunch of other countries that were world powers. I like to think we still are, but I don't think it's going to work much better for the Chinese in the long run than it did for anybody else. It's interesting.
I think it worked for us
down this road, though.
I think it worked for us a lot.
Yet, I mean, you can see how. In the last 10 years, how it got us into you know, trouble in Iraq and Afghanistan, things we should have never done what we did there. I mean, that to me was indefensible from a political or an economic standpoint, let alone a moral standpoint. But
well, that wasn't exactly building refineries.
We'll be paying for that for a long time. That was the natural extension of what we had been doing, and in some ways more profitable than in others. In some places, I think they were total disasters. So. We had some good results. We had some horrible results in kind of building that sort of an empire. It became unsustainable in any event. So,
well, Jen, I was.
It's going to be any more sustainable for the Chinese in the long run.
We had I had a client a long time, and he became one of these. He became a Michael Jordan regarding golf. He picked it up later in life and just became a fanatic at it. So he was dying to have me. You know, things you do for your clients, especially the big ones. He was dying to play Olympia Fields, right? So, of course, I knew a guy. You know the same guy from the South Side, our buddy. say, a little guy with blonde hair. You know what I'm talking about. I said, hey, you know anybody get us on Olympia Fields? When do you want to go? Next week. We're on. So he comes with my client and our, you know, the member. The member happens to be a former Catholic priest. Who was his brother ran the foster, the county. He was the head guy for like all foster kids and juvenile court and everything forever, and wrote books on the subject anyway, without going into the names. So this guy had taught school in Korea and other places. And you know, after about his fifth cocktail, he starts talking in about foreign policy. And he said, when you go overseas, he goes, when you live in America, it's the greatest country in the world. He says, if you're overseas, it's like the worst country in the world. He says, it comes down in some places, I'm not talking about Germany or somewhere, he goes, in other places, your State Department and your military is nothing more than an arm of your big companies. And I had never heard that. And I'm thinking about it, well, you know, come to think of it, maybe it's true, I don't know. You know, he says, yeah, if you were in South Korea, this is 30, 40 years ago, he says, they were there to make sure that big companies got in. And, you know, he goes, some guy from the CIA showed up in my class and I was teaching about labor unions. He said, we don't want you teaching about labor unions. And, I mean, a lot of this is extension of business, right? We're always out there trying. I mean, you can't tell me that the Iraq war wasn't about oil. in, you know, and but we don't tell people that, you know. I mean, does anybody really know? I mean, in your heart of hearts, that we invaded Iraq because of 9/11, and yet 17 of the people were from Saudi and 3 were from Egypt. From, you know, like there's no Iraqis anywhere near. There wasn't any shred of evidence that Saddam had anything to do with 9/11. You know, I mean, right?
And I think there were, you know, there were probably other ancillary reasons too, whether it was preventing, you know, access to natural gas, you know, to countries that we were opposed to, or making it easier for our allies to get. It was oil plus other things, and I'm sure there's some people who had the calculus all worked out and thought that being there as long as we've been in this place is somehow justified by what the need was. But you look at so many places, you know, that ended up to be, you know, horror spots for the U.S. You take Central America and, you know, our connections to Somoza and, you know, the United Fruit Company, Cuba. You can make a long list of places that we ended up controlling for a while. What we ended up with was, you know, hostility that we couldn't control anymore. And the business interests were lost or compromised, and let alone our political interests. You know, we developed the very resistance to the things we were trying to do there, and we haven't kept friends in a lot of these places. The French probably have a worse record than we do. So there's lots of precedent here for overstepping your goals and really hurting your foreign policy and your economics for the long term.
Well, your business people are forced. You know, and this is not, doesn't make them, they, I mean, if you and I, and we'll let Maddie do this because he'd be better at this. If we want to go to some place and all we cared about was the cocoa or the diamonds or the whatever it was, asbestos used to be, and whatever, it's all we cared about, and we're dealing with somebody. I mean, we had some dealings with somebody who was trying to do some of these hospitals and all this other stuff around the rest of the world, and the reason why their inroads were, there was a, I think the Army developed it, but you can essentially take a picture of I'm showing my age, a container, and instead of knowing that it's, you know, you could tell if there's guns in there, this thing would tell you if there was like a basketball in there. I mean, it's an amazingly invasive survey of the three-dimensional, the insides of one of these containers. And the idea was for you to take, if you unloaded the thing in Zimbabwe or someplace, and it got to New Orleans, if the thing didn't match, somebody had messed with it along the way, you were going to reject it, right? So the UN was coming up with money for all these places to, it's an attempt to stop smuggling again as well. Well, part of the deal was, and whatever, if I wouldn't say the name if I remembered it, someplace in Africa, it has your basic strongman loser that's running the place, is he had a, you're going to charge people for this, right? So the container shows up and you charge whatever, say it's $100. Well, the strongman loser, the only way he'd let you in the country to do this thing in the first place is to drop five of the $100 in his Swiss bank account. Right? So you end up, you can't, I mean, the three of us are not going to overthrow the guy, right? So we're trying to, A, which is A and which is B, we're trying to make money and we're trying to make things better for those people. Now, which comes first? It depends on the person, I guess. So now what do you do? Okay, do you give the guy his $5 and say the hell with it? Well, these guys need a hospital, and the hospital will be here long after he's gone, or what do you do? These are not easy choices. And clearly, if you're a company and all you care about is the cocoa, he's willing to say, you know, pay Matt Weber, the cocoa master, $5 a pound when it should be $6, and give me the other one, I'm going to say probably you do it. I mean, now we have a Foreign Corrupt Practices Act here where it says you're not supposed to do things that way, but that act would be very interesting in some of these other countries. I mean, what's the payoffs in Mexico compared to here? I mean, we have payoffs here, but I think they set a new level.
Oh yeah,
I've heard. So I mean, you're not going to change the world, but you also can't be this immoral ass that just takes advantage of everybody either. Now, where the middle ground there is, you know, God only knows, and maybe he doesn't even know. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, this stuff is easy to do, China, and what we're supposed to be doing. I mean, a lot of what China's doing now, they're wondering, the guys who made these loans, hey, you guys said these guys were good for it, now I'm not getting paid. Well, now, if they're not getting paid, are we going to get paid here in our dollar-denominated debt? Or is it the same people if China goes down further because they're not getting paid from these guys? Is it significant to them? Does it make it? Now, they got to pay somebody. That's the part that I, with all this mess with the politicians, John, I don't honestly believe that from Trump on down, his idea of doing business is a two-sided transaction. It's a bilateral transaction with somebody where he wins. He goes into a real estate closing and he screws the guy for 10 bucks while he's in there, and he walks out and he's proud of himself. But that's him. Okay. I don't think Lori or Jay have a clue. Even though Jay was, you know, built, had a silver spoon in his mouth. The idea of how all this stuff works together. I mean, where's the first, if this keeps going, where's the first headline in the Wall Street Journal of, I mean, we've had bankruptcies and so forth in the retail area, but where's the first, oh my God, we're not getting, somebody's not getting paid from this China debt, and by the way, he's not paying Chase or Deutsche Bank or somebody, and now this guy's going out, somebody we thought that was flush, and now this all goes down like 10 pins, yeah, because everything is so connected now. I mean, we have to be really careful. We don't put too many wrenches into the assembly line, or the assembly line stops totally.
Well, if you think about it, China has sort of used our model probably on a bigger scale when it comes to, you know, our desire to offshore our dirty industries, to look for a cheap labor source, build factories somewhere where we don't have to worry about pollution or environmental standards or anything. You know, that's what China was to U.S. corporations. Well, China has now decided, well, if we can get a foothold in Africa or Pakistan or whatever and use the hell out of that place, and we have cheap labor, we've got natural resources in Africa that nobody's ever tapped, and we'll do there what, you know, people have been doing to us. At some point, this becomes very circular because we're all, you know, trying to get, you feel, the same resources. We're trying to be there first. We're trying to get our companies in a competitive stance vis-a-vis everybody else's. And we're running out of places to dump stuff we don't want. And I just don't see it as, you know, going in a positive way. It's going to be a degraded world in terms of wages and supply chains and everything else before we're through. And who's on top doesn't really matter, because that person isn't going to be much better than the one at the bottom.
Well, the thing, the people in Beijing, I mean, Xi is smart enough to know you can't have a world-class country when people are wearing masks down the street because of pollution. Right?
True.
I mean, if it's the COVID,
well,
it's one thing.
Beijing is a first-class example of you know, hell on earth when it comes to pollution.
Yeah, and so I mean, that's what ends up happening is now all of a sudden, okay, where can we offload this crap? Well, Africa looks like a pretty good place. Nobody cares down there, right? I mean, I'm sure there's some places in South America you probably could talk them into it, but Africa's probably more of a choice. So yeah, and then plus the U.S. is under Trump. I mean, maybe just in general, maybe under Obama, we've cut back on this a little bit. We're not as anxious to throw money at these people, hoping that someday, although we still are extracting the cocoa and the diamonds and everything else from everybody, right? It's not like we're ever going to stop that. But I think we have, there's now third party, it's subcorps, it's those kinds of things where we're a little bit more distant. Obviously, because China's seen a toehold, right? They've seen an opportunity. If they want to compete with us and the Europeans, you got to get involved in these areas where the raw materials come from. Or put your factories there and pollute the hell out of their rivers, and who cares, right? Does anybody really care if you start pouring money or stuff into the Congo River? I mean, I do just because I'm a world citizen, but do you really care about a fish that goes out of business because we never knew he existed in the first place? I mean,
not if you're getting, you know, money at the other end of that. You know, somebody's got to pay.
Yeah, might as well be the fish.
The fish pay, right?
Not the fish pay. John, real quick, what do you think of the Supreme Court stuff going this week live with debating Trump's finances?
I watched the Supreme Court in session when I was 11 years old when we were on a family trip to Washington, and I took away two impressions from it. This was, you know, during the years of the Warren Court, civil rights cases were being, brought at the time. It was a solemn occasion, the most solemn thing I remember about that trip to Washington, really. But, at first it was very impressive to see, all these people that I kind of heard about and sort of knew who they were, but to see them in action talking was really something, to see them live. But the other thing I took away was how incredibly boring the whole thing was. And, and I became a lawyer. I didn't really know what boring really meant until I finished law school, but I knew then this was boring. And any time, you make the legal process into some kind of a substitute for entertainment, or to feel like people are now going to be let in on something, there's a real risk involved that you demystify it in such a way that it loses any kind of importance, and worse, you kind of trivialize it into something where, everybody's their own juror, like in the OJ case, watching this idiotic court TV spectacle. And I avoid court TV like the plague for that reason, because I think it twists the judicial process into, reality TV, where it's what the people are saying, and, the next day's news, features about what really should have happened yesterday, and they should have asked this question, and that isn't how any judiciary is really designed to function.
You imagine if there were Twitter, would OJ's case?
There's no Twitter yet, I don't think.
No, I'm saying in OJ's case, could you imagine
right.
if there was
Twitter? Oh, yeah, I mean, right, yes, I mean, it would be, well, to be avoided. So, my worries about the Supreme Court generally, I mean, going back since, Gore v. Bush, I think that the court became so politicized that they just dropped any veneer of being, immune from conflicts of interest or political leanings or anything else, and it's gotten worse, not better, and it shows in the confirmation hearings, for the last 30 years.
Were you a fan of Boston?
A monster here.
Were you a fan of Boston Legal?
Oh, yeah.
Manny, I think I might have mentioned this before. The James Spader goes in front of the Supreme Court, and what's his name? William Shatner. Of course, he wants him nowhere near him in front of the... Come on, you gotta take me with you. I've got to wait my whole life going in front of the Supreme Court. No, Denny, you can't come. I got to come. I'm your best friend, blah, blah, blah. Well, what did he make? A $20,000 bet that Spader couldn't get Clarence Thomas to say something because he never says anything. So, man, he's given his argument that he goes, Judge Thomas, would you mind putting away the Sports Illustrated? He goes, rah, 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 rah. he turns around and goes, where's my 20 grand? Or something like that. And Denny's like, wait a minute, that's not the same as having him say something. But he said something. He was mad that he told him to put away the Sports Illustrated. But, anyway, Jen, the question is when it comes to Trump's finances when does something reach, let's just say, it's not in the Constitution anywhere that I'm not a constitutional guy, but I don't think anywhere in there it says the president has to pony up his tax returns. There's all kinds of anecdotal stuff about how, the emoluments clause and how he's not supposed to be doing business while he's in there and that kind of thing. I mean, well, I guess that's the Miami. You know more about this. I mean, I'm leading the witness here. But, I mean, now all of a sudden he won't come up with it. And there's reasons to think, because he has hotels and rides. You want to make sure this stuff is separated. And, of course, he's no help, giving it to, like, his kid and so forth. I mean, so it's not like he even, played the game, which even the other side, if you played it enough, they all are dirty enough to where... If you play it enough, they just say okay. I think even that's like the gentleman's agreement that both sides seem to have. But now, all of a sudden, it's risen to the point where, since so many guys have done it, is it all of a sudden become a law that you have to do it? I mean, how does that grow like that? I mean, as much as I think, in his particular case, I mean, people probably should need to know if everybody from Russia is staying in his hotel when they come to Washington and so forth. But still. I don't know how it's a law. I mean, how it elevates itself to that just because it's become a practice.
Well, and it's a terrible practice, a terrible precedent, I think, for, politicians. I mean, there's enough dirt you can get on people in a political race, supposedly. I mean, there should be a way of embarrassing your opponent or making them admit things or whatever. You don't need to subpoena tax records or bring that into the mix. Although, you know, it's going to become, I think, you know, a more standard thing where you're expected to do this. You're expected to make complete disclosures. And there's, you know, there's all sorts of problems I have with that. But first of all, just your ability to keep doing what you're doing, whatever business you're in. Once all of your financial laundry is available to somebody who wants to misrepresent it or twist it or edit it selectively or lie about it, worse, all bets are off and you're ever surviving in business. You know, whether you're a small businessman or a big businesswoman, it doesn't matter. That's nobody's business to know all that stuff about you. And you got the IRS to deal with you. You've got, you know, penalties if you lie on that stuff, and there's, you know, you can do prison time for it. And I think that's the way it should be. I don't think it's really the world's business what is going on your tax.
I think, John, we only have 30 seconds. I'm going to guess, I'm just lobbing one out there, that 99% of the population, and I don't, you might, maybe next time we'll talk about it, I think there's some hidden benefits in real estate account and real estate taxation where you get to take off more than you actually have at risk. And I think that's what nobody wants to show, that he was able to.
Sure. And that's not tax evasion. That's just tax avoidance.
Well, but it sucks because in my industry, if you put up $400,000 in an account and you lose $500,000, you don't get to take the other $100,000. You only had $400,000 up.
Right. Well, that's a bigger topic.
We'll talk about that maybe next week. SP Futures down 33, NASDAQ Futures down 86. Be right back, Mr. David Adelman, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. He's Mr. Mel Weber. S&P futures down 30. NASDAQ futures down 77. As low as we've seen it here since we've been in. We have the Dow futures down 232. Over in Europe, that's not so much. Well, DAX is down 129. It's 1.2%. FTSE's down 19. They were flat earlier, so these guys are dropping since the last time we reported. It's 0.3%. CAC RON down 75. That's 1.7. So they're all down actually appreciably since an hour ago. Nikkei up 211. That's 1%. Shanghai down 54 cents. That's flat. Hang Seng up 371. That's 1.5%. Just as a review, Friday, that was up 455. Dow futures up 48. So we're two-thirds of the way back down. NASDAQ was up 141. So it's a kind of a Fibonacci retracement in the S&P and the NASDAQ. We'll have David explain what that is when he comes in. 10 years, 0.68, which is kind of where it's been. Bund minus 0.52. Japan positive 0.007. That's not going to get you a loaf of bread anytime soon, but it is positive. Oil up 57 cents, 25.31. Brent up 46 cents, 31.43. Natural gas, 184. RBOB, 97 cents. Maybe all the places on Bell Road were 219, except one place was still 181. Guess where I went?
Not the 219.
No. Went to the place of 181. Here we'll fill up the suburban. Top it off, as they say. Gold down 780, 1706. Silver down 6 cents, 1571. Copper down 3 cents, 273. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still, our only area of concern is down on I-57. Northbound side, just before 103rd, there it was a crash about an hour ago that was involving a pedestrian, reportedly. It was blocking the two right lanes. Now it's just the one right lane is blocked with crews on the scene. 80 to Dan Ryan is up to 35 minutes, so some delays resulting from that on I-57. But everything else looking okay out there as far as the expressways are concerned. No issues on Lakeshore Drive either. And the suburban tollways are all quiet, so a quiet commute outside of I-57. Weather today, another miserable day. Clouds, cold temperatures, 20 degrees below normal. We'll reach a high of just 46 with real feel wind chills in the 30s throughout the day. Right now it's cloudy and 40 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 99 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 78. Cheap.
I will trade this polar vortex when the high is 46 than the winter kind where the high is minus 10.
I don't know if I would. I think I'd rather deal with the minus 10 for a few days in January than deal with 20 degrees below normal in May when everyone's dying for nice weather.
This you put on the heavier sweatshirt. When wintertime, you're getting...
No, I understand that, but in the winter, you're prepared. You know what the winter is. In mid-May, you're ready for... We only get 3 months of nice weather. I mean, let's be honest.
Yes.
And in mid-May, you're ready to start seeing it. And when you get another week of 30s and 40s and frost overnight, it becomes suicidal. In January, it's just January. You don't care. It's just January.
But now, anytime people go outside...
There's no difference between 10 and negative 10. It's just cold.
But at least we didn't have to listen to Lori Lightfoot blowing her tap and them closing more stuff this weekend.
I guess I've never listened to her, so I don't know.
The week before, she was bat bleep that the people had parties and stuff. She was going nuts. And the people were too close together in the park.
Yeah.
David, how are you?
I'm fine.
What again, the whole financial world is somewhat agog that the economy's going down and the market's going up. I mean, those numbers Friday and the labor numbers, I'll dig these up because there's always more to the story, as they say. But the numbers really don't even reflect kind of how bad, we came up with a 14.7%, unemployment rate, correct? And we threw, how many people were down what? How many million, Manny? It was,
33 plus.
Yeah.
Over the last 7 weeks.
Well, but no, how many jobs were lost on the official thing Friday?
Oh, last week?
Yeah, Friday morning
it was 3.2 or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But the, we get the thing here. So David, people keep saying, when's the market going to reflect? And I'm going to say, as long as they keep pouring money into the system, that the market's never going to reflect it. I just wonder.
You called it 2 weeks ago. Asked me the question, what, two Thursdays ago or three Mondays ago? Can the market be at all time highs and the economy be, 15 to 20% unemployment? And yeah, the answer was yes. And I'm not saying you called it. I mean, you were certainly one of the first, or I called it. But, the market's been really, really resilient. And I can't tell you if it's over-resilient or over-optimistic or if it's forward pricing a lot further down the road than normal. And it can see the whatever, whether it's a vaccine or therapeutic treatments or economic recovery 20 months down the road, 25 months down the road. Maybe a quicker vaccine than anyone expects. I don't know exactly what it's reflecting, but you get those 5 to 10, heavyweight issues in the NASDAQ, they seem to carry the entire indexes, up, and that's what's happening. I mean, the rebound in the Russell, especially since it's, denominated heavily with, regional banks and, still kind of a yield curve that's very, very flat. That has really surprised me.
What I'm going to say, say it one time and then we'll go on to something else, but none of those issues mean crap. It's all the Fed. The market knows no more about a vaccine, David, than you and I know if there's people on Alpha Centauri. As you well know, when I came out of the University of Chicago, I was absolutely in the camp. I could have been if you had to do a Sig Heil to the group, I'd have come up with the Sig Heil and said, I'm in this group where the market knows all. And now that I've watched the Fed go back and forth for the last 30 years and the market move up and down basically because money going in, coming out, I'll tell you what, if they started dragging a third of the money out that they put in the last 4 weeks, the market would turn around in a dime. And everybody would say, God, what's going on now? The market doesn't think there's a vaccine. Vaccine has no more to do with the market's action than me being a jockey, for God's sake. I mean,
I agree with the first thing that you put forth as far as if the Fed removed money, that is no question the biggest underlying support. That's the put, that's the backstop. There's no question. And if that was removed, I can't tell you if it's 10% decline, 20, but, that would be the major factor. I don't agree that, all of a sudden Moderna or Regeneron or Gilead or J&J, they make an announcement that we're going to have quicker phase 2 trials or phase 3 trials and Apple rallies. I'm not saying that necessarily they quote unquote, the market quote unquote knows. But it absolutely responds to that.
Sure it does. Oh, yeah. I don't think anybody would be happier than me, because everybody we know, David, is somewhat compromised. I mean, everybody we know is not 25. So, yeah, if I could take a shot tomorrow and this whole thing would go away and I'd wake up on Wednesday morning and everybody's back to work and everything's like it was and I go down the street to the Tripoli, I'd be the happiest guy around, or certainly as happy as anybody else. The idea of to somebody come on and say, well, we're going to hunker down and, by the way, send me my check until there's a vaccine. David, it's been 40 years. There's no AIDS vaccine. I mean, I hope to God that it's
but
not
40.
But
there's therapy that makes it
right.
Undetectable.
Well, yes, I'm saying, we have improved treatment in this in the last 6 weeks dramatically.
Right.
And, And which we're very, very good at. It doesn't surprise me that way more people are dying in Iran than die here. We take care of everybody better than everything else. Why are we any different than this? And given us another couple of weeks, I don't know how much more we're going to make in the treatment than we have already. But I mean, some of the stuff, the ventilators using differently, a couple of the drugs seem to be working a little bit, a lot of stuff, the anticoagulants. I mean, our guys, you know, like I say, our guys are brilliant. We know that. But I mean, just because, plus if there's a vaccine, matter of fact, I was reading one article, I sent it around, Manny, what was it? The guy said if we keep testing, and we find out that the amount of people that die is really under 1%, which he thinks we might get to when we test everybody, because what was right in the article said this is way more widespread than anybody knows. It's out there. It has been there for 5 months now. And anyway, so suppose he's right. He said if the death piece is under half of 1% or even under 1%, how many young people are going to take the vaccine? Every other vaccine, I mean, look what happened with the swine flu vaccine in Ford's time. Is anybody going to trust the vaccine? He goes, there's vaccines that cause almost that many deaths when they come out. I mean, what?
No, I get, and yeah. That is going to be a problem because they're going to rush it. You know, they've already said, you know, Scott Gottlieb, you know, forward FDA commissioner said, you know, hey, when they're saying, you know, pin it down, when could it be, you know, I mean, is it going to take 18 months, 2 years, which would be normal, you know, or even fast, or could they rush it, you know, to market in an emergency situation? And he said, you know, he didn't take a stance on if he was still FDA commissioner, what stance he would take, but he said, hey, look, and if you declare an emergency, what happens is it's not going to be, you know, vaccine when you haven't passed all the efficacy tests. You're not going to have a vaccine available to all. But what you're going to have is, you know, a very large, you know, a large group of people that, you know, are going to, you know, commit to, you know, being part of the test group. So you might have 100,000 or 200,000 people that, you know, say, hey, I want the vaccine and I'll take my chances with the side effects. And, you know, who knows the ramifications of that?
Well, I'm curious as to, let me check me out here because I'm going on a limb here. I'm going to say that there are no coronavirus right now. Is there a vaccine for it? Common cold is a coronavirus, right?
You're asking me this? I have no idea.
Just Google. Are there any vaccines for any coronavirus? I think if the answer is no, how the hell do people say the normal vaccine time is a year and a half, too? There's no normal. There aren't any.
No, I don't know. They're looking at whatever, whether it was bird flu or SARS or, I know Ebola took 5 years, you know. I think they're just saying, okay, if they fast track phase one, phase two, phase three, like they might very well do, whether it's the Regeneron antibody test or J&J, because, you know, other than the talcum powder, you know, the market and government and everybody has had, you know, tremendous faith for decades in J&J. So J&J gets behind it with billions and says, you know, we got something, you know, but you have to, you know, shorten the phase one, phase two, phase three trials, you know, or narrow the scope of the number of people, you know, submitting to the trial, whatever. Who knows? I mean, this is uncharted territory. As you said, nobody knows.
Yeah, you brought up the talcum powder, and in our industry, David, when I make a commercial, you make a commercial, a million people got to go over it and vet it and make sure you don't give anybody any, you know, bad ideas or anything. And I really don't have a problem with that. I think that, you know, how is it that you mentioned talcum powder? Have you heard the new talcum powder commercial, Manny, where the lawyers
are
trying?
I have not.
They're talking about if you feel you've gotten cancer from talcum powder. Well, first of all, nobody has alleged anywhere that talcum powder causes cancer. What the allegations are is some bit of asbestos gets in the talcum powder because they mine, somehow or another you find talcum powder when you mine it closely to where you find asbestos. So it's an impurity in the talcum powder. Now, we would never get away with that. I mean, nobody has said boo that pure talcum powder causes anything. It's if it's not pure and something else gets in there. That's not the same thing, is it? Or am I being splitting hairs because I'm used
You know more about the science and the discovery than I do. All I know is that there's 22 law firms that said that if you feel, come to us and we'll be part of the class action and J&J is going to pay.
All right. Well, one quick question, David, then we'll get on to the market and gold and some other stuff. Talk about the questions people normally call in when you're here. Last week we added, we went up 16 million people on the people unemployed, which are not, they used to be working and are now looking for work. We kicked 7 million into the we don't know what the hell they're doing column. Could there possibly be 7 million people get on disability in 1 week?
I don't know the answer. I mean, isn't it true that those statistics come from the Bureau of Labor Statistics?
Well, this is a household survey. So they call, because what happened, Matt, you weren't here Friday, but the numbers were somehow or another, we lost 6 million people in the labor force. I mean, how the hell we did that, I have no idea. But we did. So we have 133 employed this month versus 155 last month. So that's the 22 million that, well, this is a household survey, not the establishment survey. So there's 22 million people less working in this area. But less working, but only 16 of them went to the unemployed column and 7 went to this, you know, student, disability, retired, you name it, column. So could there possibly be that many people retired last week? I mean, like policemen, firemen took their... that's an extraordinary number. Because that number has been 95, 96 million since really 2016. And now I went from 96 to 103 in 1 month. 1 month, not 1 week. I mean, it's... Did everybody who could possibly retire, retire?
I'm going to be real facetious, but I'm not going to be quite as facetious as what it sounds like. Again, this hidden economy, and I don't want to stress it too much because I'm sure I'm overbearing and I'm the only one watching it. But I mean, Etsy and Shopify. I mean, Etsy is really, you know, $35 with no earnings straight up. And they're basically saying the number of, whether it's artisans or actual businesses coming online in the last 4 weeks have almost tripled. And I mean, you know, try and sell that stock. I tried to sell that stock and it hit me where the sun don't shine. I mean, it just, no earnings, you know, 30 times book value. And I mean, it's straight to the roof. And then they come out, you know, and say we don't have enough space on our website because everyone's opened up shops left and right and selling used goods, selling news goods, you know, designing, you know, silver jewelry and whatever, and we don't even have enough space.
Well, I mean, so David, I don't have a problem with saying that those guys are doing somewhat better when you get, you know, 30 some million people all of a sudden don't have as much money as they did the week before. I mean, you know, Etsy's gain is not equal to Macy's loss, I don't think, or even any of those. I mean, it's not, whatever. I mean, it, you know, there's some point here when you start dropping it. I'm sure there were people that, I mean, I guess when you have half the people.
Yeah, that worked at Macy's that are now designing jewelry on Etsy.
Well, it could be.
Opening up a business on Shopify.
Well, I'm saying, I have not seen, I mean, man, the people that are going to work in blue jeans and sweats, right? Or the people at home, I don't think, there's not a whole lot of reason if you think you're going to shop at home or work at home for the rest of your life to go out and buy a suit this week.
Right.
Unless you're on CNBC where...
And a tie.
Unless you're on CNBC where you say, keep the pants. I just want the jacket and the tie. So what do you think of, we got gold, we got oil, we've had oil make somewhat of a comeback. We're still in pretty serious contango, but at least it tells me that the fiasco at Cushing, Oklahoma is not going to be near as bad this month as it was in May. We're probably not going to see people selling the contracts under zero, because I think the firm that did that has probably fixed it. Yet, gold is seems to have stalled here, David. I'm
I mentioned that last week, that just the pattern, and I want to be friendly just because of the, what the Fed's doing with printing money and whatever, and beef packing plants closing and, you know, prices rallying, you know, and that kind of thing. And, you know, I picked up a prescription yesterday. It was $18, you know, 3 weeks ago, and it was $20-$25 yesterday. I'm like, what the heck? How'd this happen? And, hey, the price went up. And, I mean, it's a discount, you know, pharmacy. And she said, hey, we're paying more. You're going to have to pay more even with your discount card. So, yeah, it's crazy. But the gold's chart really, I'm not saying it looks bearish, but it does not look like it did. Lower highs, lower lows. And for the first time last week, I said, you know, I'm always unfriendly to silver, especially since it's much more of an industrial metal than a precious metal. But silver looks better than gold.
Well, if these guys continue to push these money supply numbers, then we have a year where it's up 20%. I don't see how the hell gold's not up 20%.
I mean, no, I agree with you.
But you're right. It doesn't look so hot. And
no, it doesn't.
And I just, you know, kind of strange. Or maybe I think one possibility is some countries liquidating.
Yeah, maybe to whatever.
Yeah.
To boost the economy, they have liquidity. Who knows? I mean, certainly China's opened up the drains, you know, like no tomorrow with liquidity. And it looks like, I mean, who knows what their numbers, you know, they certainly don't meet accounting standards. But, you know, supposedly last month their exports picked up. So they're loosening. They're borrowing from our tabloid.
Well, David, we've talked, you know, a lot on the show about if you and I have been, long before this even started, you and I were basically bitching that the level of debt has reached the point where, come on, 2008 was a problem because of too much debt. We got more debt down than we did then, right? And so, I mean, the solution to the debt problem was more debt. And all of a sudden, this thing comes on top of this, essentially, mess where we've had, you know, the household debt reached a new record in the same day COVID lands on shore, pretty much. And, you know, we have now, we always talked about the dollar-denominated debt from China. I mean, where's the first spot? Is it going to be Deutsche Bank? Is it going to be Italy? Is it going to be Greece again? And now this morning I'm reading about these third-world countries are not paying back China on their, what do they call it, the something road debt or whatever. And because they gave all these people money for infrastructure, the idea being China could sell more goods because now they could distribute in their country, blah, blah, blah. Now they're not paying that back. I mean, if something bad starts, where do you see it start? I mean, Deutsche Bank, I mean, everybody talks about them, but they seem to be hanging in there. It'll be an Italian bank. It'll be Santander that couldn't wait to finance every used car in this country. I mean, I don't know how that's going to go if we continue.
Yeah, I mean, and you've pointed two spots. I mean, Santander struggled with debt and always getting ECB bailouts, and Deutsche Bank, I have no idea what their balance sheet looks like. I know when they had, you know, 40 times leveraged, you know, CBOs, you know, from Goldman Sachs. I mean, that was a disaster, and I mean, the stock took a hit, and the company had to reorganize and whatever, but those are two definite spots. And just, you know, maybe HYG, the high grade, you know, ETF, maybe that displays it. I know corporate, I mean, what I follow a lot is, you know, just Investors Business Daily's top 50, you know, and if debt to equity is more than 1-to-1, more than 100%, it doesn't make my list even for consideration. And I mean, I'm really finding a tough time, you know, finding 20 out of their 50 that don't, you know, go over that standard. So the corporate debt to equity, I mean, even Apple, you know, oh, we got $145 billion on the books. Oh, yeah, let's float a 100-year bond. I mean, so the rates are low, let's borrow more. Well, who cares what the balance sheet looks like? If the market's willing to give us money, we'll use it. And if we buy something, great. If we put in technology, great. If we keep it on our books, so be it.
Yeah, let's keep it on our books. When do you think we're going to, if, what do you think happens if one of these days our guys, I'll say, shake their head out of their behind and we get a CPI number of like 1.5 for a month? I think it could be that way this month. I've seen stuff going, you know, up
23%. I don't think they'll ever tell us. I mean, your brother told me that they'll never tell us that because the entitlements would have to get the cost of living, you know, bonuses, and then they'll really be up the creek. And so that's, I'm not saying it is now, but that likely is on the map. and they'll never tell us. That's what he said, and I believe him.
Well, I don't. There's some stuff you can sneak by people, hospitalization and so forth, but I don't know how you sneak, you know, food by people.
I agree. I see it. But yeah. At least to the extent that they can get away with it, I don't think they're telling.
If you had to put some people's money to work today, like I think I might have to, Russell's or Q's?
Not Russell's.
All right.
Q's are so extended. I don't know. I suppose another 2% down, maybe the Spiders.
All right, bud. S&P futures up 33. NASDAQ futures down 72. We're leaking a little bit more in Europe as well. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.